Hello, hello, and welcome to Art House Garage, the snob-free film podcast where we make art house, indie, classic, and foreign cinema accessible to the masses. I'm your host, Andrew Swetman, and today on the show, I'm bringing you a spoiler-free review of the new film, Triangle of Sadness, from director Ruben Östlund. I'll also give a quick rundown of several other films I've been watching lately. Stick around. Before we get into the show, don't forget Art House Garage has a Patreon. Sign up today for extended episodes, bonus episodes, video episodes, and ad-free episodes. All that, plus a discount on merch in the Art House Garage shop. Go to patreon.com/arthousegarage today or find a link in the show notes. Okay, back to the show. Welcome to Art House Garage. It's just me on the show today. As much as I love having guests come on and discuss films with me, scheduling worked against me this week, so I'm going solo. And I actually enjoy doing a solo episode every once in a while. So I'm going to review the new film, Triangle of Sadness. But before I do, I thought I'd take a few minutes to give some quick reactions to a handful of other films I've seen lately. Award season is upon us, so I've started getting into some of the buzzy, prestige films that come out at the end of every year. Here are a few that I've watched. First up, a few weeks back, I watched See How They Run, a murder mystery starring Saoirse Ronan, Sam Rockwell, Adrian Brody, and David Oyelowo. It's a murder mystery set in 1950s London. I was very pleasantly surprised by this. The trailer made it seem kind of like a Wes Anderson ripoff, and you can certainly feel his influence on the visual style of the film, but it's much more than that. Recent films like Knives Out and Bodies, Bodies, Bodies have given us unique takes on the murder mystery genre, and this does something similar, hitting all the notes of a murder mystery, but with sort of a self-aware meta layer to it all. In the film, the suspects are all actors in a stage production of an Agatha Christie story, and the actual murder case begins to mirror the play. Saoirse Ronan gets to flex her comedy muscles in this, and she and Sam Rockwell make for an insanely watchable detective duo. See How They Run feels fresh, and it's a lot of fun. One of my most anticipated films this year is Moon Age Daydream, the new documentary about David Bowie from director Brett Morgan. The trailers for this film all tout it as an immersive, big-screen experience, so I made a point to see it in a theater. This film looks and sounds amazing, and it really does immerse you in all things David Bowie. It's less like watching a film about Bowie, and more like Brett Morgan is trying to plunge you into Bowie's psyche for a couple of hours. I respect that approach. The film is essentially a number of musical sequences of live performances and music videos intercut with interview sound bites and a surprisingly diverse set of video clips. Yes, we get footage of David Bowie, but we also have footage of outer space, nature, and a lot of classic film clips. There are things like Metropolis, 2001 A Space Odyssey, and even The Matrix. It's all over the place. These experiential music sequences are strung together, with the film slowing down a little bit in between songs for longer interview segments. Again, I admire what this film is going for, but unfortunately, the style cannot remotely sustain its runtime. The film is essentially a two-hour montage. The experience starts to feel very repetitive about 30 to 45 minutes in, but this film is 2 hours and 15 minutes. I'm a David Bowie fan, and I appreciate the audacity of this film, but for me, the risks of making a film in this style did not pay off. Your mileage may vary, but I recommend Moon Age Daydream only for the biggest of Bowie fans. I also recently watched the new film Bros, the romantic comedy from Billy Eichner and Nicholas Stoller. This film is making history for being the first gay rom-com from a major studio, and for its all LGBTQ+ cast. My wife Allison and I went to see this, and it was absolutely perfect for a date night. I probably haven't laughed in a theater all year as much as I did watching Bros. It's as funny as any of the other Judd Apatow-produced comedies like Knocked Up or Forgetting Sarah Marshall, and it really stands apart in the Apatow-verse because of how queer the story is. Apart from the humor, the rom-com-ness of this film really works as well. For a romantic comedy, there are certain story beats that will always be there. The meet-cute, meeting the parents, some inevitable conflict that threatens to tear them apart. So for a film like this, the question is, how well does it handle each of those tropes? For me, it nails almost all of them, and the chemistry between Billy Eichner and Luke McFarlane, who plays the love interest Aaron, is great, both romantically and comedically. One other interesting aspect of Bros that I really appreciated is the way it sort of deconstructs Billy Eichner's public image. On the podcast recently, I've talked with Omaya Jones about auteur theory, and some cases in which the auteur, or the driving creative force behind a movie, isn't the director. In this case, it's undoubtedly Eichner, who co-wrote the script and stars, and the lead role is clearly tailor-made for him. The hilariously angry and impatient persona he's perfected on his show, Billy on the Street, is present here too, but the film also lets him be vulnerable and question this persona to some degree. At one point, his love interest, Aaron, accuses him of just looking for excuses to be angry all the time. And his character's anger is also tied up in activism in the context of Bros, so it gives new dimension to Billy Eichner as a performer. I thoroughly enjoyed Bros. And finally, I want to mention the new film Empire of Light from director Sam Mendes, starring Olivia Colman, Colin Firth, Toby Jones, and Michael Ward. This one is a bit divisive for critics, but I appreciated it seemingly more than most. I'm planning to do a whole episode on this one in a few weeks, so that's all I'll say for now, but Empire of Light really worked for me. There's a few other things I've watched recently that I can't go into detail on yet. I saw the new film Till about Emmett Till and his mother. I also saw The Good Nurse, which stars Jessica Chastain and Eddie Redmayne, and also the latest from director Martin McDonagh, The Banshees of Inisherin. Those are still under embargo at the moment, so I can't talk about them just yet, but look for more on those in the next few weeks. And that is what I've been watching lately. Hey, if you are a podcaster or you've ever thought about starting a podcast, listen up. Obviously, I love podcasting. I've been doing it since 2018, and now I can't imagine my life without this creative outlet. But as Rachel Sinnott's character reminded us in the recent film, Bodies, 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 podcasting is hard. Not only do you have to do all the logistics of scheduling guests and developing the content of your shows, there's a whole lot of technical stuff you have to handle also. Recording, editing, making the audio sound good, making the video look good if you're doing video. It can be overwhelming. That's why I started using Zencastr. It's an amazing tool for recording audio and video remotely without sacrificing quality. It's really easy to set up a virtual recording room, invite guests, and then all you have to do is hit record and start chatting. I'll tell you what I love about it too is the ability to do footnotes as you record. So if my dog barks while I'm recording and I need to remember to go back and edit around it, all I have to do is type a short footnote, like dog, then I've got a timestamped reminder. I don't have to listen back to the entire episode anymore to edit my podcast, thanks to that feature. That is a huge time saver for me. On top of that, Zencastr does automatic post-productions for audio and video, so you literally press a button and it spits out a file that's mixed and ready to go, and it all happens right in your web browser. There's a bunch more features you can see on their website, and there's even a free version so you can test things out. And best of all, at least for me, if I ever have any questions or issues, their customer support chat is always right there to help me, so I never feel like I'm on my own. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my code ARTHOUSE, that's ARTHOUSE. You'll get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story.
So, is this runway casting for a grumpy brand or a smiley brand?
So it's a grumpy brand, yeah.
Congratulations! Show me that Balenciaga look. Oh. Suddenly I'm dressed in something way less expensive. It's H&M! Yay! Balenciaga. And H&M. Balenciaga. And H&M!
You look paid for the tickets. Not bad, huh?
So what do you do?
I sell shit.
The success of a luxury cruise mainly depends on you. I don't want to hear anybody saying no. It's always yes, sir, yes, ma'am.
I command you, enjoy the moment.
No.
No?
No.
What? You say no to me?
No, no.
Oh, sorry, it's yes.
Yeah, no.
Yes?
Going in.
Yes! Woo-ha-ha! The saints. Do you think it's possible to wash them?
I don't think that's possible, ma'am, because this is a motorized vessel.
Yeah.
So we don't have any sails.
It was sails. Yes.
Well then, in that case, we will clean the sails.
Yes.
Of course.
Yes.
That was the trailer for the new film Triangle of Sadness from Swedish director Ruben Östlund. The film stars Harris Dickinson, Charlie Dean, and Woody Harrelson. In order to keep this review spoiler-free, I'm going to spend some time talking about other films and doing a little comparing and contrasting. First of all, after seeing Triangle of Sadness, some viewers are drawing comparisons to Parasite, the Bong Joon-ho film from 2019, and the two do have some key things in common. For one thing, both films won the Palme d'Or at the Cannes Film Festival in their respective years, which is one of the most sought-after film prizes in the world. Both Triangle of Sadness and Parasite also deal heavily with themes of capitalism, wealth, and social class. And both films contain some shocking moments that it's best to know little about going in. I recommend avoiding details about Triangle of Sadness as much as you can. But more than anything, one of the things that was so astonishing about Parasite when it came out a few years ago is the way that film does so many different things, moving deftly between different genre conventions, shifting in tone, and reinventing itself multiple times, all while maintaining consistent thematic threads to hold it all together. Parasite is funny at times, frightening at times. It's a crime thriller, it's a quasi-heist movie, it's a pointed satire. The film does all these very different things and does each of them incredibly well. Triangle of Sadness does something similar. But beyond those parallels, the films are, of course, quite different. Triangle of Sadness follows Carl and Yaya, a young couple who both work as models. In the beginning, the film is a clever send-up of fashion culture and social media influencers, which leads naturally into discussions of gender dynamics and gender roles. One of the earliest things we see is a heated conversation between Carl and Yaya about why men are expected to pick up the bill at a restaurant. This is also one of the first times we see what becomes a trend as the film goes on. In order to explore the different themes the film touches on, Östlund, who wrote the screenplay for this film, in addition to directing it, repeatedly turns things on their head. Of course, women are routinely paid less than men for the same work in almost all industries, but Carl and Yaya work in modeling, one of the few lines of work in which men are consistently paid less than women. And so when Carl makes a big deal about paying at a restaurant, the gender norm of the man getting the bill is at odds with their particular situation. He makes a lot less money than she does. This unique situation serves to knock the viewer off of their assumptions. The film similarly flips our expectations as it examines capitalism, socialism, patriarchy, social class, and wealth and poverty. Another strength of this film is its unique tone. Ruben Östlund makes a habit in his films of creating incredibly uncomfortable situations and then letting us sit in the awkwardness for much longer than we'd like to. Like in the case of his 2014 film, Force Majeure, which is about a family on a skiing trip. When an avalanche threatens them, the husband abandons his family to save himself. When everyone survives, we're left to wallow in a staggering amount of marital tension. In Triangle of Sadness, there are similarly awkward situations, often arising from the tone deafness of the rich when dealing with the people serving them. In the second section of the film, Carl and Yaya take a luxury cruise, and we meet several of the yacht's other super wealthy patrons. What begins as simple awkwardness escalates as the film goes on, and Östlund crafts a tone that is somehow both realistic and absurd. It's grounded in reality enough that we care about what happens to the characters, while at the same time, it's over the top in a way that feels heightened and almost like a fable. It's also a remarkably dark comedy, finding humor in situations that are also horrific to watch. And that brings me to something of a content warning. This movie is stressful, and it also turned my stomach like few films do. As I was thinking about why I found it so upsetting, I think it has to do with that tone. I've seen my share of gross horror movies, but here in Triangle of Sadness, the nauseating scenes come within a context that feels realistic on some level, and so it really got to me. This is all to the film's credit, but just know that if you have a weak stomach, you may struggle with a few scenes, and one shocking sequence in particular. I'll also say that the most nauseating scenes are also some of the most impressive, and also the funniest, at least up to a point. Another filmmaker I thought about when watching this film is the British auteur Peter Greenaway. A theme I always think about from his film, The Cook, the Thief, His Wife, and Her Lover, is the tendency of human beings, and especially rich people, to dress things up. Greenaway loves to point out how arbitrary the differences are between fine dining and regular food, or how ridiculous it is that people go out of their way to make a bathroom feel fancy, considering what people do in there. The point is, your digestion works the same regardless of how much money you have. Some related ideas are at play in Triangle of Sadness. So yes, this film is bonkers all over the place and deeply uncomfortable. It's also outstanding. I haven't even mentioned the performances yet, which are all excellent. Harris Dickinson is hilarious as the insecure Carl, and Woody Harrelson is absolutely perfect as the cruise ship captain. A few other standout performers are Zlatko Burek as Dimitri, Dolly De Leon as Abigail, and Vicky Berlin as Paula. Their consistency, along with the remarkable script, keep this film feeling cohesive, even amidst its many left turns. In fact, each twist and the new scenarios this film offers serve to bolster the screenplay's central themes and push them further and further. It's very satisfying in that way. I'll end by saying something I also said about Parasite back in 2019. This is absolutely one of the best films of the year. As a PS, I want to make special mention of the late Charlie B. Dean, who plays Yaya. She's perfect in this film, and as you may have heard in the news, she tragically died earlier this year at the age of 32. She was clearly a huge talent and a highlight of this movie, and it's a great loss. Triangle of Sadness is now playing in limited release. As you can tell, I really enjoyed Triangle of Sadness. I hope to talk about it more down the road. I think a spoiler discussion would be wonderful for this film, so stay tuned for that. Next time on the show, we will continue our Terrence Malick series looking at the film Knight of Cups, which I've never seen. I'm very excited to get into that one. Bethany Worden is back for that discussion. The week after that, I believe I'm going to have friend of the show, Russell Miller, back on. He's about to see a lot of things at some exciting film festivals, and he's going to come break it all down with us, and then also discuss the film Empire of Light with me. So stay tuned for that. And with that, thank you for listening to Arthouse Garage. We've got a few years worth of episodes, and you can hear all of those in your podcast app of choice. Our theme music is by composer Paul Hunefeld. Learn more at appallingproductions.com. If you want to support Arthouse Garage, become a patron over at patreon.com/arthousegarage or find a link in the show notes. You can also buy an Arthouse Garage t-shirt at arthousegarage.com/shop. If you want to support us without spending any money, leave a rating or review in your podcast app, and that is hugely helpful. Stay in the loop about Arthouse Garage and the films we're covering by subscribing to our email newsletter by going to arthousegarage.com/subscribe, or you can email me directly, andrew@arthousegarage.com. And of course, follow on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Letterboxd. Just search at Arthouse Garage in all those places, or find links in the show notes. That will do it for this episode. Thank you again so much for listening, and until next time, keep it snob free.